Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the call. And I think we're ready. Let's start our broadcast for this evening. It's great to have everybody with us tonight, and welcome to Tuesday night and our celebration of life. This is a wonderful time for us to begin this process because it's the first Tuesday night of this new year, 2012. We'd like to acknowledge and welcome in studio tonight in my home office, Ronnie Calmes from the great state of Louisiana. Welcome, Ronnie. Ronnie's one of our affiliates who helps take the OG message out to the world. If anybody on the phone is interested in becoming an affiliate, please let us know. Just call the office at 800-701-2394. We'd be happy to share with you what it takes to become an affiliate, especially as this new book is coming out. There are some tremendous opportunities to take this book into corporations. We've had a corporation buy 150 copies, another one buy 50 copies. We're looking for more and more companies who want to take this concept, this book, Today I Begin a New Life, and carry it into the corporate environment so that we can start to impact lives at every level. So if that's something that would be of interest to you, please call the office again, 800-701-2394. That's 800-801-2394. Very exciting. I'll give you a quick update. I have finished my final proofing of the PDF, which is the final document where the book has been laid out to go to print. I finished that at midnight last night. They came back with all of the changes, and I had a chance to go through it today, found two or three more minor changes. I'll be sending those off to Fran tonight, and she'll finish that artwork, and we are ready to go to print. This is so exciting to have been down this road. Now, I said that thing, I think, to you Tuesday nights ago. It's very interesting when you end up reading a document in its entirety from the eye of a proofreader two or three times in this final process. It takes about 11 hours to do that, and that's been some of the most thrilling time I've spent. Yesterday was just a wonderful day, right up till 11:30 last night when we finished, sweetheart, going through that book and realizing the stories that are in here. Oh, what a privilege to be able to take these principles to the world, to bless people at this particular time in history. This is a difficult time. People have been pretty beat up. And if you're feeling this way and you'd like to be able to get these principles into your life in a book form, go to www.ogmandino.com/begin. That's ogmandino.com/begin. You can buy a single copy of the book. We'll send you the PDF this week. You'll get it right away so that you can start reading the book, and then you'll get a copy of the book probably about the first week of February. I'll sign it for you and send it to you. If you'd like to assist us in taking it out to the world, Ramona says, I'm talking really fast. I must be really excited. I just ran down here after a wonderful dinner with Ronnie, and just racing ahead, aren't we? Okay, I'll slow down. Go to ogmandino.com/begin, and if you want to buy 10 copies of the book, I'm not here peddling books. You know, I would hope no one would ever feel that way. This is a life's mission, 58 years of a life's mission coming to fruition in the form of a book. I've wanted for so many years to share these principles and the moments in which they were learned. Where was I? I remember one of those nights. And my agent asked me to take me there. I think I may have shared this on a Tuesday night call. I'll share it again. I'd had this horrific dream in 1988. It was Christmas time. In my dream, I woke up. Didn't wake up in the dream. I woke up in the dream, and we'd lost everything. Millions of dollars were gone, and we owed $1 million. And I was just so crushed by this experience. The feeling was just awful. And not wanting to wake Ramona, I climbed out of bed. Remember, I'm in a dream. I went into our closet, got down on my knees, and began to pray. That's what you do, Og says. Who isn't in a time of sorrow or confusion or mystery beyond our understanding? Who isn't sought information from their God, and I certainly did. And that night I had a really amazing experience where God reached into my soul and ripped out my very proud heart, and it was very proud. A year later, we'd finished our last apartment complex. We didn't have anybody left in the office. We were renting the buildings up, and the bottom building, last two units at the end of a sewer line, were backing up. It became very obvious very soon that somehow the fall line from those units down here to the sewer and out to the street wasn't adequate to get that siphon started that happens inside of a sewer line. And it needed to be repaired. And that meant our company, which meant me. I couldn't even afford a $10 helper at the time. Couldn't. I was driving a Mercedes. I was late on the payments, and it was soon to be, what do you call it, repossessed, I guess? Except for I was just going to turn it back to the bank right to that point. It's a beautiful Mercedes, so I drive about an hour each day to this property and don my overalls and rubber boots and start digging this trench. It took about a week to dig it. It was about 3 feet deep, went under the sidewalks, right through the middle of shrubs. It was just a mess. One place we had to have the people couldn't live there. They had to be in a motel. And we needed to hurry quickly because money was extremely tight. And I just remember when I finally got to the point where I needed to undo this sewer line that was all backed up. And Ronnie, you understand construction. And one of my favorite movies of all time is Shawshank Redemption, when he's breaking through that pipe and the sewer just sprays everywhere. It wasn't quite spraying like that, but it certainly filled up the trench in the bottom where I was standing. I'm standing in this human excrement, this foul-smelling mud, and I'm crying out loud. I'm crying. It's early in the morning. People are walking by. I didn't care. I was talking to myself. How did I ever get here? How did I get here? How could my life get so out of control? I had everything. Everything. The money could buy. And I had Ramona and our family. I was the luckiest man on the planet. And now all of a sudden, that's about as good as it gets, sweetheart. She's asking about the volume on the microphone. Maybe we could raise this up just a little bit. There we go. It was... in that moment that I reached my bottom. I was literally in a pit. Finished the job, got it fixed, started backfilling. It backfilled a lot faster than it took to dig it out. Hosed myself off. It was like, I don't know, 10 or 11 o'clock at night by the time I was done. And you don't just drive an hour back and forth if you can finish, so I finished. Climbed in this Mercedes, and I talk about in the book that there was a real difference between the sweet smell of the leather inside and that stench that was just clinging to my flesh. And I went home, took a shower, wouldn't come off, climbed into bed, couldn't sleep. Only thing I could think of was to go into my closet and pray, which I did, and had a very real experience that night of dealing with a very proud heart. It was the beginning of a new journey, a new life. It wasn't the last dark night. It wasn't the last difficulty. There'd be many more. I talk about those. I've been asked to be very vulnerable in the book, which I've chosen to be, so that wherever you are, whatever you're going through, you can feel comfortable examining the truth of your circumstances, whatever that might be. Knowing that we must build from bedrock. If we are going to grow. And also for you to know that there is a way out of the darkness. Now we discover as we go deeper into life that we get out of the darkness. It doesn't mean that everything's perfect. It just means we learn how to handle those kinds of circumstances differently. I'm thinking some of the trials that have come since that time. And you just intentionally create. You take a look at what is and you just keep working. Og says, I'm not going to longer spend any tears on my pain because they're a waste. I'm not going to mourn all of these things. I'm going to wallow around in my despair and stay in creation. Not going there today. I'm going to stay in creation. Well, that's our topic for tonight. Our topic is, what do we do when we're there? Because it's like we're driving down a road, and the road starts tipping to the left, and it's like there's ice on it. It's like it's inevitable that we're going to slide off right over there in that really deep, dark hole, that dungeon of despair and discouragement. It's like, man, how do you stay on the road? How do you stay on the road? Sometimes life just creates that kind of a challenge, and many of you tonight are there. And I want to give you just a couple of simple things. Those of you who've been through this particular process, I'm going to challenge you tonight to take it deeper, to actually do some of the things I'm going to share with you. Because it's not in the hearing them or understanding, because to understand and not to do is to not understand. It's actually to apply these principles. We're going to start with something very simple. I can tell you within the last 24 hours, I've used this one myself. Just take out your left hand. Everybody got one? Just pull it out. This is a tomahawk. Everything over there, that's fantasy, that's discouragement. Fantasy meaning I escape to a time in the future when everything is okay and I start living out these elaborate dreams, and every time life shows up differently, I end up back in the discouragement again. Highs and lows and highs and lows and highs and lows. I'm putting this tomahawk right here. Everything over there, not going there today. Just say it with me. If you're comfortable wherever you are, just say it out loud. Not going there today. Well, if we're not going there, where are we going? Because it's not enough to say, I'm just not going to be negative today. I'm not going to. Well, what we keep reflecting on and resist is going to persist. We must actually make a different choice. So not going there today, what am I going to do? I'm staying in creation. Now, this creation we're going to talk about tonight is mental creation. It's the first stage in a two-stage process. First, we mentally create, and then we physically create. That's how creation works. So if we want to first mentally create, we want to get out of the dark dungeons of despair, because that's not creation. That's pessimistic. It's destructive. We don't want to spend time escaping into fantasy, because that's destructive. We'll just get that euphoric, norepinephrine-driven, counterfeit form of joy, which gets interrupted in the next 24 hours by cortisol-driven, fear-driven, fear, anxiety, overwhelm, discouragement. Ugh. This is an awful way to live. Not going there today. I'm going to stay in creation. I'm staying in creation. If you have to do that 75 times a day. Ramon and I bought a tomahawk for one of our clients who did that 75 times in a day. Yes, whatever that takes, not going there day and we stay in creation. Every time I share that concept with someone, I talk to them a couple days later, I say, how's your tomahawk? They say, oh, I just got done using it an hour ago. Everybody uses it once they get one, so use it. This is just getting really conscious in the moment, aware that we're going to do something different. Now, why is it important that we do something different or differently? One, 97%, and with a variance of 3%, that's virtually everyone, has the natural ability to vividly visualize. Now, I've shared that with someone. They say, well, I don't visualize, Dave. I don't even think that way. I go, well, there's a very good chance you may not be aware. So this week, one of the very first things we want to do, and not going there today, I'm staying in creation, is to become conscious of where we do go. I'll give you a couple places to look. When you're feeling kind of anxious, become conscious of where you are. Today, it's very common to have a financial issue create this anxiety. A financial issue might be that we get a notice that we're overdrawn in a checking account, or our credit card just got over its limit, or we got a mortgage payment coming and we don't know exactly how we're going to pay it. you can guess is that with this anxiety is that reality and our expectation, concrete condition for happiness, has just been threatened. What did we hope would be different? Okay. What did we hope would be different? Because it's in that hope that we start to find the fantasy. Now, some people might say, well, I just don't dream anymore, Dave. I just don't even dare to go there. I don't even dare to dream about possibilities. Okay, well, that doesn't mean we don't vividly visualize. It just means we're not using it to see possibility or even escape to a fantasy. We're most likely using it pessimistically. The word we want to explore is worst-case scenarios. Worst-case scenarios. This is when you're lying in bed at night, and by the time you're there for 15 minutes, you're homeless, you've been thrown out on the street, you have no more food, you're out without a job, the whole world's come to an end. I don't want to say that to have us laugh, I just want us to get real. That vividly, we can pessimistically think. In fact, pessimistic thinking requires vivid visualization. They're tied together. I am vividly considering all the worst case scenarios that could happen. I think one of the classic examples is you're at work and it's a Friday night and you get one of those messages, you know, one of those emails, you know which ones I'm talking about, where it just looks like someone really is angry with us and maybe we're anticipating a promotion or we just did a job we thought was great and this email just seems so accusatory and so negative so we decide we're just going to be proactive and we're going to call the person who sent it instead of sending something back. It's late in the day and just ask them what's going on. So we call and we find out they left early. They left right after they pushed the send button. They're out the door. They're gone. And we ask where they're gone. Well, they won't be back till Monday. They've left town. Okay? What do you do for the rest of the weekend? Does it ever pop up again? You ever been in one of those arcades where the little monkey heads pop up and you got the mallet, you know? It's kind of like that. You know, you put it away, but it's right back. And you put it away, and it's right back. And how many variations will we play out in our mind of possibilities? Those are vivid visualizations. Anybody on the phone ever gotten to a point that in a situation like that, that you want to call out the search and rescue? Hunt them down? Get the problem solved? We can be so consumed with worst case vivid visualizations that we're not present in the now. We're in our mind, someplace else. We're not there for our families, our friends. This isn't a good place. And then we get to Monday morning, 8:00. Show up at work. We decide we're going to drop by this person's office. And we are prepared for war. Because of the vivid visualization, we are actually believing some of those things are true. We've made up what are called straw stories. Now, a straw story, take your hand like this, like you're looking through it, and look at something across the room, just something. I'm looking at a little statue of a knight. That's all I can see. But we have a tendency when we write straw stories to look at that single item and write a feature film script about it. Sub-characters and subplots, and it gets really complex. And it's so vivid that our mind actually believes some of those things are true. And we often will react based on those visualizations. That's how real they are. We actually snipe back, we send an email, or we're angry, or we react. Well, in this case, it's 8:00. We drop by the office, and it's kind of like, and we step in, and I got your email. They kind of look up like, oh, okay, great. Did you have a chance to check on that thing? Check on that thing. Then we realize that in the email, there was a question about checking on, so we kind of missed that piece. We read into all this other stuff, and we missed the intent. No, but I'm going to first thing this morning. Oh, good, great, thanks. How was your weekend? Oh, it was great. How was yours? Oh, I had a great time. It was wonderful. It's good to be back, though. Great to be here. have a great day, thanks. And we're turning around and walking away going, oh, my goodness. And we get to do this. Everybody do it with me. Take a big deep breath. It's called masochism. We get to beat ourselves up with this terrible whip, and then we get to feel better. You know, it's paraphrasing Mark Twain, but don't tell me worrying doesn't work, because everything I worry about never happens. And that's true about a lot of our worst-case, very vivid scenarios. And quite often, we can get into a pattern. I just want you to check in this week to see if you have been in this pattern, because you want to break it in 2012. You do not want this pattern in your life, where you go, worst case, worst case, worst case, life turns out better. Whew. Worst case, worst case, worst case, worst case, life shows up better. Whew. It's kind of a victory. It's a victory that it didn't turn out as bad as our mind made it. What a tragedy, because when we're in this worst-case scenario, our body is releasing cortisol, and the studies have drawn clear connections between cortisol and stress, between cortisol and the effects of stress, immune deficiency challenges, hypertension, exacerbation of diabetes, and even the big C word. This is a dangerous thing. Dr. Kennedy from Florida tells us that 95% of his geriatric patients, 95% of the disease that presents in their lives is a direct result of the chronic release of cortisol. They are habitual worriers. Well, we've talked a lot about fantasy in the past. I just thought tonight it would be wise for us to talk about catastrophe, this pessimistic worst case scenario, because I'm finding in today's economy some people have stopped dreaming and fantasizing, escaping, because that just hasn't worked. They're now taking that gift of vivid visualization, which is either or, all or nothing, right or wrong, life or death. They're now applying it to the pessimistic side of the equation, and it's driving them deep into a hellish place of discouragement. But you have the gift. Even if you're using it pessimistically, we get to step back now for a moment and go, yay, I've got the gift. I've got the gift to vividly visualize. But I'm not going to go there today. I'm going to use it in creation. That's all we're going to talk about tonight, is shifting however you're using your gift, either to fantasize or catastrophize, and more catastrophizing than ever before, and using it in a way in which we can receive, through this vivid visualization, inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to challenges that will light up part of our brain when we receive them. Whew, ignites our passion. Our passion, our willingness to do whatever is required to create intangible reality, that which we've seen so clearly in our mind. That'll be our discussion the next couple weeks as we get to physical creation. Right now, our whole purpose is to use this gift, not go into fantasy, not go into catastrophe, to use it in one of five ways, constructive ways, to get those ideas and impressions and solutions to challenges that will ignite our passion. See, nobody gets to skip the work of creation, the tangible work of creation. But we can make it very exciting if it's driven by passion. When we are using it constructively, we are also in partnership with, grasp this concept, in partnership with the power of creation. That's huge. That means those ideas are really inspired. When we bring that passion into the here and now, as we'll talk about in the next couple of weeks, that same power can show up and endow us with even more ability and could put people on our path who can serve us and who we can serve. It's miraculous. It really is a miracle. And it speeds up creation to its fastest possible pace. Anything we do when we're over there in discouragement or fantasy, we're slowing it down. Imagine that. Whenever we're seeking a life of ease, no more pain, no more frustration, no more stress, we're slowing it down. Every time we want a fantasy fairy to magically manifest our wishes, if we just visualize it with enough intention, we're wasting our time. It's slower and slower, because eventually everyone must do the work of creation if they want to realize their dreams in tangible reality. Nobody gets to skip this. Nobody gets to skip it. Besides that, there has been a lot of discussion in the last decade, particularly last decade, about abundance. And there's been misinformation on the topic of abundance, not because the pundits are misguided. It's because they're intentional creators. They naturally use their gift to receive inspired ideas, and they do the work. But to them, it's not work. It's fun. They can't separate work from play. It's just the way they live. And there's been a belief that if people could just see what I see, you would create what I create. What we discovered in our research was 98% of those with this gift use it destructively. They're engaged in that pessimistic thought process, or they're engaged in fantasy, which ends up in pessimism. Great news again, we have the gift. But if 98% of us have been using it destructively, and someone tells us, all you have to do is ask, just be worthy. That's true. Based on this concept, what does it mean to be worthy? There's only one requirement. Would you like to know what it is? To be able to ask and receive, here's the requirement. Number one, you want to engage in life. Somebody's smiling. I've heard this from David before. I want to engage in life. I don't want to escape. I don't want it to be easy. It won't be anyway, so why would I want it? I don't want to miss the opportunity to stretch and grow and become all that I can be. Wow. And I know that this force of creation, this power greater than me, would never grant something to me that would rob me of the opportunity to stretch and grow and become all that I could be. He won't grant it anyway. It would be in conflict with creation. The whole purpose why we're here, to learn and become all that we can be. We'd rob ourselves. It would never allow us to. So we choose to engage in life. Two, we choose to embrace principles. Principles, true principles of creation. Three, in our secret desires, our real intentions, purely at the fiber of our being, we want to connect with and serve other people. Sometimes we use this gift of visualization to escape from people. We're sick and tired of dealing with annoying people. So we have an opportunity to make this shift. So just write that down. Engage in life. Embrace principles. Connect and serve. Now, if you imagine if there were, and I believe there is, a power greater than us, a power of creation. Can you imagine how it would respond when we show up? I'm going to stay in creation today, and our secret desires, our real intentions. For some of you, I would say your private prayers. That's what we think about when we're by ourselves. In the secret recesses of our life, our desire is to connect with and serve people. Can you imagine how that force would respond to that request? Imagine. Fourth, Our desire is to create value everywhere we go and with everyone we meet. We leave everyone better than we found them. Every situation we're a part of, we find better than we found it. We bring value. And lastly, we make a choice to be someone who enriches the world. We're not here to take. We're here to give, to contribute, to enrich. So imagine this. We hear people say all the time, all you have to do is say, I'm worthy. Well, the way we say we're worthy is what our secret desire is. Our real intention tells it all. We can't secretly want ease and just to get away from annoying people and then publicly act like we care. The word is duplicitous, double-minded. Can't do it. That's why we teach the principles of intrinsic validation, staying in creation. Now, will we do this perfectly at first? No. We're going to have challenges in our life. We're going to want to get away from it. We wish it weren't so hard. Yes, we're all human. But the more we can come with a pure intention and a secret desire to engage, embrace, connect and serve, create value, and enrich the world, the more we will freely, as the dews fall in the morning, freely receive. Freely receive. That's the first half. So now you know what the worthiness word means. Now let's talk about what we receive. In this portion of creation, what we receive is inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to challenges. I think of the DVD, The Secret. Many of you have seen this. Jack Canfield comes out of the shower in the show that he talked about coming out of the shower with a $1 million idea. Well, the idea didn't just manifest. What was manifest was the idea. He got excited. You can see it in his eyes. Wow. That's our passion igniting. That clear vision of possibility. That will drive you to do whatever is required. Whatever. Without counting the cost or tracking the time. Whatever is required to bring that vision into tangible reality. Can you feel it? Well, I want to give you, as many as we have time for tonight, ways in which we can use our mind constructively to receive these inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to challenges. When we're ever tempted to go over there and not go on there today, pick one of these and actively engage. I'm going to talk about one of the simplest to engage. It's called inspiration. Inspiration. Inspiration, we start the day by asking or stating, if there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I will serve them. I knew who that person was at 10:30 this morning. If there's anyone I can serve, that's you and your uniqueness, your unique life experiences, the stuff you were dragging around in your sack that you've emptied and taken out and put in your heart, and now you're showing up listening differently, asking different questions. What do you know? What do you understand? What have you felt? What have you experienced? What have you overcome? If there's anyone who needs that, put them on my path, and I will serve them. Now that is a request that can be granted. We will receive. What will we receive? Sometimes it's an impression to call somebody. Ron and I were talking about this at dinner tonight with Ramona. And he was talking about coming over this overpass on the freeway and getting this impression that he needed to contact someone he hadn't seen for 20 years. 3 blocks later, he's sitting at a signal light and the man steps off the curb. That's kind of interesting. We are really connected. You see, abundance is not something that we just ask to receive. What we ask is, how can we serve? It's not something that we seek to win, like buying lottery tickets. abundance is a sacred process in which we actively participate and eventually become. I'm seeking inspiration. Who can I serve? I'm thinking of. If my temptation is to go in that dark dungeon of despair and that just keeps nagging at me, biting at my heels, I'm going to start playing out people's names in my mind. People I went to school with, or people from my church, or a civic organization, or a nonprofit that we might work with, whatever it might be. Until one of those names just says something to you. That person needs you. That person needs you. And then we take action. I just put in the book 2 days ago a story that I got to witness firsthand. It's a story of one of our neighbors, Jeremy Wardle. Jeremy, he and his wife lost a couple of their young children. They had two and lost two. And they decided they were going to adopt children, so they adopted three, two from Haiti and one from the United States. And they had been working for 3 years with the Haitian government on a fourth adoption. 3 years, that's a long time. Several trips to Haiti and back. They knew her. She called them Poppy and Mommy. But every time they went, they never could get it quite finalized, and they would have to leave, say bye-bye. On January 11th, 2010, they finally received word that the adoption had been finalized and they could come and pick up their daughter and bring her to the United States. Does anybody remember what happened on January 12th in Haiti? Yep, the very next day. On Monday, they got the news. They were flying out the next Monday to go pick her up. And on Tuesday, Haiti was left in shambles, including the government building where all of those records were kept. They waited for days to get word. No planes in, no planes out, no communication from the orphanage. And they finally got the phone call they were waiting for. It came on a satellite phone. That Gabrielle was okay. She was alive. But unfortunately, there were many small children at the orphanage. They'd run out of food. They don't keep a lot on hand. They couldn't get food in, and the children were starving. And some of the infants, these are small babies. They didn't have formula for them. They couldn't feed them. And a small child is pretty fragile, newborn baby. And Jeremy got this impression. He called me on the phone. He said, I'm going to Haiti. I still remember the moment. He said, I'm going to Haiti. When? Tonight. Wow. So all the friends gathered what we could together and went over to his home and had some prayers together, and he went off to the airport with a backpack, some cash, a couple changes of clothes, and some protein bars. And it's like, what's the plan? Well, somehow I'm going to go to the Dominican Republic, red eye. Somehow I'm going to get into Haiti. Somehow I'm going to find Gabrielle. Somehow I'm going to bring her home. How? Well, I felt this really strong impression. I cannot deny that I am to go. So I'm going to trust when the time comes, the next one will come. Everybody agreed? Go. So he flies. Lands in the Dominican Republic. Gets a taxi to a local hotel. And interestingly enough, this taxi starts driving him down a dead alley where there's some guys waiting at the end. Jeremy got this inspiration. I just put this in the book because I'm just sharing with you tonight. He got this inspiration to pull out his camera, his phone, and play like he was videotaping everyone. So, oh, hi. I just want to get a picture of all of you. I'm broadcasting this to all my friends back home. That's what he said. And they put him back in the taxi and drove away and dropped him off at the hotel. He averted a terrible mugging. Inspiration. He's at the hotel and he gets inspired to go out to the lobby, and he meets these guys, a search and rescue team. Finds out they're from southern Utah. Finds out that they're looking for a mission and they have a helicopter. So he goes with them to the helicopter, this field, and the helicopter's being protected with guys with machine guns. And explains the situation, and they say, you're our mission. And they fill this helicopter brimming. diapers and everything they needed. Now, how are they going to find Gabriel? I tell you, he had photocopies of Google Maps. That's what he was going to use. They're going to fly over this heavily wooded area, and they were going to find this thing right here on this map. Well, and conspired. He could tell you how they got inspired to go this way and inspired to go that way. And there it was. There it was. As they were landing, the aunties who take care of the children were screaming, "You saved us, you saved us." Jeremy gets landed, and little Gabby runs up, "Poppy, Poppy." And he says, "Every other time I've come, I've had to say bye-bye, but not this time. I'm taking you home." Well, the ground kept shaking underneath. He said it was really unnerving. You know, it was just, I mean, really massive movement. Several days, got more food in, had a vigil over this orphanage for the days that he was there, and they were finally able to secure the paperwork out of this building in Port-au-Prince. Helicopters were called back in. They took the seats out of the back of the helicopters because he wasn't going home with just Gabby. He had managed to get the paperwork on 20 other children who had been approved for adoption and cleared. And while they're getting loaded up in this helicopter to fly to Port-au-Prince to get on a private jet and fly to Miami, Holly, Jeremy's wife, was coordinating with 20 very excited adoptive parents who were converging on Miami to meet the flight. I keep telling you, miracle after miracle, inspiration after inspiration. When our mind is not going in discouragement and despair or fantasy, it's really staying focused. How can I serve? How can I connect? How can I create value? The inspired ideas, impressions, solutions to challenges. His were life-threatening. Now Gabby's just two blocks down the street here at their home, united with their family. Beautiful thing. I watched Kevin Hall when we traveled to San Diego last October for his Life Mastery Retreat. We're headed out this weekend. I get to speak on Friday or Saturday at that event. We're so excited to be a part of that again. And I watch him. Every place he goes, if there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. And he's constantly bumping into someone he can serve. He bumped into someone at the airport he hadn't seen for 2 years. She was going to Lisa Nichols' event. Lisa Nichols was in the secret. Lisa ends up coming and speaking at Kevin's event at the end of the week, and now she's heavily involved in his Genshai Nation. Genshai, never make anyone feel small, including yourself. This huge movement going across the country, she's now heavily involved in that. All because he's looking. Always looking. Imagine how our days would be different if every morning we woke up and we said, if there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path, and I will serve them. And then showing up. And at the end of the day, just being amazed by who's been put on your path and how you could uniquely serve them. This is a great way to live. It's a great way to use our gift of vivid visualization. Now, next one. This one we spent a lot of time with at dinner tonight. It's called mental rehearsal. Ronnie said, I've been mentally rehearsing for all my life. I just didn't have a name for it. Now he knows what it is. Now we have a name for it. Many of you have, too. If you've ever given a presentation, there's a very high likelihood that you spent some time in your mind kind of living out the presentation. Standing in front of the room and delivering your speech. That's a mental rehearsal. It's as vivid as a fantasy. You say, well, I make this stuff up, and I go, well, we're fantasizing, and our desire is to escape from life, and we really want that thing. I just want that. Nobody need tell us how to make the pitch. pictures up in our mind. We're there. If it's a Ferrari we want, we're driving our fantasy Ferrari along this shoreline, and the waves are crashing against the rocks, and there's a sailboat out there backlit by the setting sun, and our companions next to us waving their arms, and nobody needs to tell us any of that. It just happens. It unfolds. This is the gift of vivid visualization. Using it that way, we get all kinds of trouble. But using it in a mental rehearsal, where we're going into the future, not to escape, but to get instruction. Get instruction. Guidance. And being open to an idea. So, here's how it works. I want you to consider something that's coming up in the next week, a difficult task, a meeting, spending time with a relative that's maybe uncomfortable. It might be a sales appointment. Might be a presentation you're going to give. Something that's needs a little preparation. I want you tonight, when you're lying in bed, instead of going anywhere else, discouragement or fear, go to that space, to that moment in time. If it's a friend sitting at a restaurant, go to the restaurant. Sit down with them. And begin to visualize the event. Now, it may feel a little uncomfortable because you're actually almost forcing this to happen. Fantasy just unfolds. This will eventually unfold, I can promise you. Because I used to fantasize and catastrophize, and now I think in mental rehearsal. It's a wonderful thing. So it will become a natural use of this gift in time. Initially, it might take just a little bit of effort. Okay, I'm at this meeting. I sit down, and what do I say? So you say it. What do they say in response? And it'll get more and more fluid, and you'll learn things. Because you're constantly saying, what could I create? How could I create that? And how would that serve this person? Am I coming with an agenda to fix them or to sell them or to convince them? What would happen if I just showed up for them and stepped into their world and became a great listener? And based on my life experience, asked questions that demonstrated I'm understanding where they are. Until there's a safe place and the walls come down and the cooperation floods out. We can experience this. We do this with athletes all the time. Dan Goldman talks about this in Primal Leadership. He talks about Laura Wilkinson in the Olympics. I think it was the 1980 Olympics, 19, maybe 90, 2000, 2000 Olympics. She was a platform diver. That's 3 meters. It's a long ways down. I think it's 3 meters, yeah. She broke her toe. Remember that part. She broke her toe, couldn't dive. So they had her sit on the platform and vividly visualize her dive. She was mentally rehearsing. Mentally rehearsing. It was so vivid, the same brain chemistry, brain circuitry is firing if she were actually doing it. She was strengthening connections, almost creating muscle memory without using her muscles. Isn't that interesting? Well, she got to the gold medal round, won the gold medal. Had not practiced for several days before the Olympics, which is a death knell for an Olympic athlete. They're so finely tuned, they cannot miss those rehearsals. But she did, physically. But mentally, she did them. We have basketball players, have them shooting free throws in their mind. Whew! 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 Downhill racers, pitchers pitching no-hitters. You learn a great deal about finesse or how you would say something or something that you notice that you're presenting that you haven't prepared. Mental rehearsal is an extremely powerful event. This is one of the primary reasons for this gift. We have misused it in fantasy, those very vivid visualizations about what we'd like to have and living beyond, or discouragement. It's really designed to go to the stage of our mind, invite the power of creation to join us, and have it show us. It's been my experience that there is a power, and this is how it talks to us, with ideas, impressions, and solutions to challenges. because almost everyone on this call is getting more of them than they realize. They've just been discounting them. I was going through a proof. Gosh, I wasn't going to tell you about this. Okay, I was doing a proof. And I was going through all of the corrections that needed to be done. And I'm in this space. Help my mind to be clear. Bring ideas to my mind. Anything that you can see that needs to be changed. I was reading. I was living it. I was in this space. I was putting myself in the position of a reader. I wanted to feel what it would be like for them to hear this for the first time. And this impression came. To go back to the previous edit, I'd miss something. I trust it. I went back. And sure enough, I had. And I remember, in that moment, having just an emotional moment, I said, thank you. Thank you. That was an inspired moment. That was an inspiration while I was mentally rehearsing. Stay in this space. If you've got a problem you want to solve, mentally rehearse. Spend time here, vividly visualizing possibilities. Let's live them out in your mind. Now, I'll tell you, you don't need to have any help to catastrophize. That one will spin from one worst case scenario to the other. Nobody need to tell you, stop just a moment, you need to do this next. You just do it. It just happens. Mental rehearsal with practice can become as fluid and natural. We're not coming here to escape. We're coming here to be instructed, to receive guidance. Now, if you want to receive more and more profound inspired ideas, act on the little ones. Act on the little ones. It will become increasingly profound. And every time you act, and the veracity, the authenticity, the source, force greater than yourself, this power, there's a connection to the universe. That abundance is a sacred process in which we actively participate and eventually become. This is part of that active participation. Mental rehearsal, inspired idea, acting on it, becoming more whole and complete and real and genuine and authentic, knowing and being known, trusting and being trusted. It's a sacred place. But that's what this gift was designed for. Let me give you one more tonight. It's called exploration. Now, I've shared this story, but I just love this story because I remember when I got the email and I called my client. He was so excited. I got to tell you what happened. He said that he had been engaged in a mental rehearsal. He wanted to put an ad in an online service for his business. And he'd been in a mental rehearsal, and it just unfolded, you know, asking that power of creation to join him on the stage of his mind and to help it unfold. And he had been a catastrophizer. I tell you right now, just absolutely dyed-in-the-wool catastrophizer. And he's learning how to use this constructively. And it's like, is this really okay? You know, because what he was imagining was he was watching a man at 1 o'clock in the morning pacing the floor, tearful. He'd lost his job that day. That's what he just knew it. He knew the man had lost his job. He saw his wife come out. He saw the man turn, so she didn't see his tears. Are you coming to bed? Yeah, I'll be in bed in just a few minutes, sweetheart. Okay. She goes to bed. He goes over and sits at the computer, and he fires up the computer, and he goes online to the service, and he's going through the ads. He gets the impression this man's searching for an answer. Comes to my client's ad, gets all excited, and something in life interrupted his mental rehearsal. It's like, I want to go back there and find out what that said. He couldn't recapture the feeling, but he knew the kind of person he wanted to talk to. So he started applying exploration. exploration is playing out a variety of options without making a tangible commitment. We can test an ad in our mind if we choose to. We could decorate a room before we buy the furniture. We can decide whether that door is going to swing the right direction or not in our bathroom remodel before we ever raise a hammer. This is one of the gifts that you have with exploration, with this vivid visualization. And you start writing an ad. It's like an Etch-a-Sketch. That didn't work. That didn't work. Well, that's a little closer. Not quite. Finally, it hits. That's it. That would speak to that man. If there's somebody in the space that he's in, looking in this place for an answer, that ad will speak to him. So he placed the ad. I think it's $25. 2 hours, 30 qualified leads. More than he'd ever had by far from any other campaign. That's exploration. Now, fantasy, where we want a house, for an example, we go move in and because we want to escape, and you can tell me the color of the tile and the temperature on your feet, and oh, it's going to be so wonderful, and we start living in this place. That's dangerous. That's moving into your castle in the sky. However, we can explore the kind of house we'd like to be in. And while we're exploring, we ask practical questions. What would it take to create the money to buy this place? Am I willing to make the sacrifices necessary to earn that money? What is my real reason behind owning this home? Is it ego? Do I want to serve? Is this a gathering place for all of my friends? You might even, in an exploration, engage in a mental rehearsal and go have dinner with some of the neighbors and sit in their home and meet them. How comfortable are we with those people? Would we be comfortable in this neighborhood? Or do we just want to have this so that we're better than them? Or is this a place where we would feel alive and welcomed, where we could contribute? That's exploration. And so we explore. Ronnie's here in my home tonight. Ramona's sitting next to me. I still remember the time. I don't think I put this in the book. I took it out. That when we bought this home we're in right now, we were lying in bed in our previous home, and I woke up and I said, "You okay, sweetheart?" She says, "Yeah, I've just been exploring." "What are you exploring?" The house, because we've been looking at this home. I said, "Well, share more." She'd taken bicycle rides around the mountains up here, and Ronnie, you've driven up here, so you know that would be quite a bike ride. and jogged the neighborhood. She spent time with the grandkids. Our son is just a couple blocks away from here. What would it be like to be here? She decorated all the rooms, and she really liked it. She said, I think this will work." I said, "Okay." She had been exploring possibilities. Key is, we were ready to buy the house. So it's okay to explore. We don't want to spend time in this space on something we can't yet afford, other than to ask those questions. Do I really want to do what's necessary, and what would that be? That's what we're exploring. This is an escape to, and then putting a deadline. I want that house manifest by next January. Based on what? Based on what? January? January isn't an action. It's a date. What are we going to do between now and then? Is it even possible to get that done between now and then to make that happen? That's the reason for exploration. Explore it. Get clear on what it is, and then get clear on what it's going to take to actually create it. Etch-a-Sketch, okay, maybe we'll downsize a little bit or upsize, or we'll do something different. Etch-a-Sketch, draw again. Etch-a-Sketch, draw again. We're making decisions without making tangible commitments, which allows us to mitigate, which means to lessen risk. We don't make as many mistakes when we get to make them in our mind and then avert them. It sure beats making them all intangible reality. So that's exploration. Well, next week we're going to go into problem solving briefly, and then we're going to go into goal setting. I want you to start thinking about a couple of things in preparation for goal setting. One, what kind of a relationship do you want to have? Do you want to have a committed companion? If so, what kind of a relationship? Two, I want you to reflect on your business. How much money do you want to make in the next year? I want you to reflect on that number. And bring those two. How would you like your relationship to look? and how much money do you want to make in the next year? Bring those two to our discussion next Tuesday night, and I'll walk you through how to use vivid visualization. Remember, I'm not going there today. I'm staying in creation. One of the five things that we'll do is plan and goal set. Get very, very vivid, indelibly imprinted visions on our heart of what it is we're going to create, so we know why we're doing what we're doing every day. It makes sense. It's part of getting us to there, that which we've seen so clearly in our minds. It's a wonderful way to use vivid visualization. Well, it's great to be with everyone. I'd like you to study this week. Scroll number eight. I'll multiply my value 100-fold. Og says that we're likened to a grain of wheat. We can be thrown into a stall and fed to the swine. We can be ground into flour, made into bread, broken open, and devoured by the will of others. Or we can be planted in the deep, rich soil of the earth. That darkness of the soil is our abilities, our failures, our discouragements. We get to have objectives, purpose, nurturing. That's what using our mind does. It allows us to take one grain of wheat and multiply it into 100 grains of wheat. If we use our mind destructively, we'll destroy the very seed. If we use it constructively, we'll grow and we'll sucker the seed and it will sprout 100 grains of wheat. Og tells us if we do that 100 times, we can feed all the people of the world. So let us learn how to multiply our value 100-fold by using our mind constructively in this first stage of creation. Next week, goal setting. Week after that, we're going to talk about physical creation, being present in the now, passion-driven, making these things happen. May this be a great week. May this be the best week of your life. We're in January. Can you believe that? It's 2012. Congratulate yourself for being here. I would imagine there might have been some times in the last few months when you wondered if you would be. As healthy as you are,